A little weird to me, but you were welcome to do it. I'm sorry, I covered your hat there.
I'm not offended.
Thank you. By the way, so in order not to be the guy who gives out toothbrushes on Halloween, I brought candy today. And in order not to be the guy who just goes, here's some sugar, take it, there are apples outside, and all the kiddos have had a chance now. And I would encourage you, they're ambrosia apples that are at Quick Trip, and I've fallen in love with them. They're actually what I take deer hunting with me now, which I kind of feel like I'm baiting, even though I'm not baiting, because I'm sure the smell of apple probably just hurts me, but it makes me feel like I'm trying to draw them in. And since I haven't killed anything, obviously I'm not doing a very good job of it. So if you would turn in your Bibles to the Gospel according to Luke, or it'll appear behind me, or it is on the paper that was in your chair. And we're going to read verses 11 through 19 of the 17th chapter. This is what the word of the Lord says. Now on his way to Jerusalem, and I'm going to pause for just one second, because if you look back at the beginning of the chapter, you're going to see this. So Luke is basically like two halves, which is typically the way halves work, is there's two of them. But the first 16 chapters are Jesus doing his ministry all around the area, and specifically in Galilee. At 17, it's like Jesus just suddenly does this turn, and all of his attention is going towards Jerusalem. Everything that we see from now on is going to be either while he is going towards Jerusalem, or while he is in Jerusalem. The entire focus goes towards that. And that means a couple of things. Part of what it means is that Jesus, while saying yes to things that are on his route, he has intentionally said no to things that are not on his route. One of the great things about Jesus, the Messiah, is that he did not have a Messiah complex. He understood that his purpose was to go to Jerusalem, and that was his highest good. And we're going to see where there are people in other cities that they have needs. But Jesus says, I'm going to Jerusalem, because he knew that's where he needed to be. Sometimes we get drawn in so many different directions that we can't say yes to the most important thing. We can't say yes to Jesus because of the fact that we're being drawn to all these other areas. And literally, just one of the things I love about Jesus is he was the Messiah, and yet he did not think everyone has to be saved by me, even though everyone would be saved by him ultimately. That salvation comes through him and through him alone. But there are people that he turned away from who had legitimate needs. He just realized what the real need, the biggest need was, and that was for him to go to Jerusalem. So, going back, verse 11. Now, on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee, and as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. When he saw them, he said, Go show yourselves to the priest. And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, Rise and go. Your faith has made you well. So guys, we're going to talk today about this story of Jesus interacting with these lepers, and specifically with one leper. And leprosy is a disease that was common around the ancient Near East. It is still common now. It is primarily in third world countries, but it still happens. If you read the 13th chapter of the book of Leviticus, pretty much the whole chapter is on leprosy. And it's on guidelines. So you get this whole situation where if there's swelling or a rash or a shiny spot on the skin, it may defile the skin, and they go to the priest. Now, what we need to understand is what we think of as modern leprosy is not necessarily what ancient Near Eastern leprosy was. That same thing happened. So modern leprosy, well, it does stuff like this, okay? Yeah, Robin, that, in my opinion, that is the correct response. And this is one of the few photos that I could find that showed the severity of it and at the same time didn't make me want to purge myself. What? Yes, basically, yes. If you go online, and I would not encourage you to do this, there's some really bad photos. Leprosy today is a disease that can lead to death. It doesn't kill you point blank, except for the things it does to you. It's kind of like diabetes in some extent, okay? The things it does to you affects that. You can reach a point where your hands are gnarled up, where you're losing body parts, and part of the reason you're losing body parts is you lose the nerve endings in them, and in a third world country, a rodent will come in and bite that body part, and you don't feel it. It's bad news. In biblical time, leprosy was a rash. Okay, I mean, you had this, but you also had, right now, I've got a little zit on my skin, okay, but to be complete, you ever have one of those little bumps that you know you should not, yeah, I wish, because then maybe my voice would stop changing. You ever have one of those little bumps that you know you shouldn't itch, and yet you find yourself itching it? And so last night, I'm at the watching TV. Actually, we're watching the World Series, and I'm just doing this, and I end up peeling the scab off, and there is blood coming down my face. I don't think you saw that, Noah, but I would do this, and I find myself keep on touching it and then going, oh, is it bleeding? I don't know why you do that, but I mean, is it bleeding? Is it bleeding? And obviously, every time you touch it, you pull the blood off to where it can't coagulate and form a scab. Guess leprosy could be any series of things. Really, really, really dry skin. It could be rashes that happen. I've visited with people before who had little growths that pop on their face, and that would be leprosy. It's not life-threatening. But it is life-threatening. If you look in the 13th chapter of Leviticus, and I would actually encourage you to read that today, okay? The thing that is so devastating about it is this, that what happens with leprosy is it separates you from everyone else, because the fear was you might have a white rash, or it might be what we would consider modern day leprosy that is going to eat away at you. And they were worried about it. Well, if I had it going from me to you. I mean, think about it. We still do that. When there are diseases that we're scared of, we react by pushing the person away. If you remember Ebola a few years ago, we were pushing people in need away, even when the scientists were saying, realistically, there's not that much danger to us. If you're my age, think of what happened with AIDS. You can't get it except for bodily fluid. Keep them away. This is how people respond. That fear dominates. And so often our fear separates us from other people. And in leprosy, it specifically, if you had a little rash that looked like leprosy, you were excluded until that rash was healed. And then 7 days after that, you were outside the camp. I'm convinced that the worst thing we can face in life is separation. And the reason for that is I believe that we were built in the image. We were created in the image. And that word is very important, created, because it implies that not only were we created, but also that there's purpose involved in that, okay? That God created us, and then the next question has to be, why did he create us? What was the purpose in that? I believe it was that we would glorify and enjoy him forever. That's why it's so sad when people don't know the Lord, is because they don't know the very one that they were created to enjoy and glorify forever. And that's why that separation matters so much. If you think about it, our sin, it separates. It does that thing. So if you have ever read the book of Genesis, the first three chapters, even if you haven't, you may know some of the story. It's the creation story. So if you've got the creation story of Genesis 1, the creation story of Genesis 2, and then in chapter 3, we have the story of sin. And if you look at the story of sin, the immediate repercussion of that is separation. Adam and Eve eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and they eat the fruit. Does anybody know what happens when they eat that fruit? Their eyes are open. They see good and evil. And the thing about it is when they see good and evil, suddenly they realize that what they just did was evil. And they are this is my southernness that's coming out. They were naked, and they were ashamed at that point. Nothing else had changed, okay? They were naked beforehand. They were nude beforehand. They didn't have clothing on. There was no shame in it because there was no need for shame in it. But suddenly, they sin, and they are separated from that feeling of just being secure. They're separated from that feeling of knowing we are loved by God. And if you look at the story, they are separated from God, they are separated from each other, and they are separated from creation. They go and hide from God. A God that we believe is all-knowing, they go and hide. This wonderful moment where God actually asks graciously. He says, "Where are you?" He looks for them. That's an opportunity for them to point out and say, "I'm right here." It's this first act of grace among many. But you look at the curses. I mean, what ends up happening is God says, "Who told you you were naked?" And Adam blames Eve. Eve blames the snake. And God says the curses that happen, they are separated from Him. They're separated from each other, but now they also have to work the ground, and it will be toil. They were working the ground beforehand. We were created to be stewards of the garden. We were created to work, but our work goes from this wonderful act of declaring who we are and who we serve to drudgery. See, sin has separation. I think it is the biggest fear of humanity. Think about times that you have faced something that was just absolutely terrible, and you didn't want somebody there to give you the answer to it and just get rid of it. You just wanted somebody there. One of my favorite customs is a custom called sitting Shiva. It's when someone dies, comes from the Jewish community, and you go to their house and you just sit there with them. Just so they have somebody there. Just so they're not alone. And if they want to talk, you can talk, but your purpose is not to go there and talk. Your purpose is just to go there and just be there. One of the best moments I've ever had chaplaining was I went and visited one of my employees' grandmothers who was in a coma. And he was just like, I don't want her to be alone. Would you go and sit there? See, we understand this. We don't want to be separate. But think about these lepers. They couldn't touch someone. I mean, I know some of us in the room don't like to be touched, but one of my favorite things, I kiss my kids on the forehead. You're almost 22 now. But they're 24 and almost 22. I guess you're at the age where we don't have to say almost anymore, do we? You're 21 now. I think it stops. I don't know. I'm not going there. But when you leave, I'm going to kiss you on the forehead. Guys, think of never being able to hug your family. Think of never being able to shake hands with somebody. And one of those lepers is not just a leper, he's a Samaritan. If you look at a map of where Jesus was going. So Jesus' ministry up until then, he bounces around a lot, but the majority of his early ministry is around here. And if you look, it says he was going along the border between Galilee and Samaria. So many of us in the room understand some history here. What you need to know is this used to be all of ancient Israel. And then the Assyrians came in, and the way the Assyrians took over a population is they would come in, they beat you, they have dominated where you are. And then, in order to make sure that there's no trouble, they take whoever it is they think might could lead a rebellion. Whoever it is they think might can offer something that would make the people there go, "Oh, we're powerful," and they take you away. You read the book of Daniel, it comes out of this. So they took the people here in this region that were Israelite, they took their leaders, they took their artists, they took their politicians, they took their thinkers, they took the people who could build things, and they just took them away, and they spread them in other places. And then they brought in other people from other areas to be there. So suddenly you have separation in the midst of that. You need to get somebody to work on your plumbing, and your plumber is not quite the same as you, so you don't relate as well. You need to go to a doctor, and your doctor is not quite the same as you, so you don't relate as well. And what ended up happening from this was they all ended up marrying together, and they formed basically a new people. Samaria comes out of this, where they're kind of Israeli, and they're kind of not. They worship similarly, but they don't at the same time. And the people of Galilee, who were Jewish, and the people of Judea, who were Jewish, could not stand the Samaritans. If you're familiar with Scripture, there's a story where Jesus talks to a Samaritan lady, and basically she's like, I cannot believe that you would talk to me because I'm a woman, and I can't believe you'd talk to me because I'm a Samaritan. The story is that a person from Galilee walking to Judea, instead of walking straight down, would walk around this way so as to avoid Samaria. I like to make a lot of jokes about Wisconsin Rapids, but I drive through there all the time, okay? I mean, I go to Pittsville a lot. I never go. I can't stand Wisconsin Rapids. So you know what? I'm driving up to Rudolph first, okay? I don't do that. I go through there. You had hatred that was so severe here that people would walk around. And Jesus is walking along the border of Galilee and Samaria. If you read this story, it's fascinating the way the gospel writers tell it. If you look at how it's written, it's got kind of a little like, ugh, gotcha in there. He doesn't reveal that one of them was a Samaritan until about the middle of the story. And if you notice, it's kind of like a shocker moment. It's like, and he was a Samaritan. This was, if it was like a horror movie, this is where you would hear the music kind of just building up, dun, 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 where you were saying, no, don't open that door. Don't go back. He's getting them at this point. They're thinking, oh, these poor people, they're already separated. And now they've been healed. But one of them was a Samaritan. He's not just separated by his leprosy. He's also separated by the fact that the people around him cannot stand him. And apparently the other nine from Jesus' statement are Jewish. And these 10 lepers, one of them is a Samaritan. So not only is he not able to interact with his own community, but the new community that he's formed, he's probably not able to interact with them either, because they're Jewish and he is a Samaritan. This is separation in the midst of separation. Guys, I can't think of how horrific that is. You want a good indication of things? You look at the story, it talks about that they stood at a distance. Their hope of salvation was Jesus. They see him there and they have to shout from a distance. Because biblically, they would have had to have shouted out unclean for fear that somebody would touch them. Because if you touch them, you would be unclean. Think of how many things happen in our life that separate us from the ones we want to be around. Think of the stuff that happens in our lives that we do that separates from the God that we were created in the image of. Have you ever gone to church? A place where you were going saying, I want to worship God today. And you got there and you just felt, I'm not worthy. I'm just not worthy. There are so many things in our life that separate us. That separate us from God, from each other, from the world around us. I can't tell you the number of times that something has happened where I felt some hurt that I wanted to correct, but I also worried that if I tried to correct the hurt, it would just make it worse. We live in a world that was created to be in unity with God, but all around us is separation. It comes from our sin, which is rebellion. Sometimes it's not even our sin, it's just we're stupid. Oh, I haven't talked to so-and-so in forever. I should call them. But what if it's been too long? I mean, there's a real easy way to correct that. You call. But I don't know about you, but every now and then I think, has it been too long for me to call them now? How How dumb is that? Couples that are in love, that are best friends with one another, that get in fights, and the very person that they want to talk to about the argument they just had is the person they've gotten into an argument with, and they can't overcome it. We live in a world that is created to be unified like God is unified, but because of our sin and because of the enemy that there is just full of separation. One of the ministries of Jesus is the ministry of reconciliation. It's this wonderful thing. And that's what Jesus does here. Do you notice he heals all 10? If you look at the story, it doesn't say that the other 10 were not healed of their leprosy. They were. Jesus says, go and present yourself to the priest, because the way you were brought back into the community if you had leprosy was that you went and showed yourself to a priest, and the priest would go, yep, there's no rash there, and then you would be brought back into the community. So Jesus tells them to go and do the right thing. But the Samaritan's response does another type of healing. They look to Jesus and they recognize he's the one who can set us free from our separation. He can set us free from this disease that separated us. He can set us free from our sin that separates us from him and from others. He can set us free from that separation. And they look to him, but they have to stand at a distance and shout, have mercy on us, have pity on us, have compassion on us. They have to stand at a distance. They never got to come to the Messiah and be with him. They stood at a distance and shouted for help. But the Samaritan is so overcome with thanksgiving from the fact that he has just been set free from the disease that has probably separated him from his family, has separated him from his community, has made him live among a bunch of strangers who probably hated him. He's so overcome with this that he must turn back to Jesus and tell him how thankful he is and glorify him. And do you notice the statement? He goes from standing at a distance to being at his feet. The other 9, they were healed, but they didn't come back and interact with Jesus. The Samaritan, the one who was probably hated, the one who had this disease that separated from everybody else, he's been set free from all of that. And now the Samaritan, the one who is supposed to hate the Jew and be hated by the Jew, bows down at the feet of the Jewish Messiah. See, the wonderful thing about our gratitude is it directs our face towards God. When we truly become grateful and we express our thanks to God, it focuses us on Him and we begin to interact with Him. Because it's really hard to say thank you to somebody when you're not facing them. My parents would have chewed me out if I said thank you to somebody as I was walking away from them. I think you would do the same with your kiddos. Jermaine, would your mom chew you out if you were saying thank you as you were running away from somebody? It's nice to know you're listening to the sermon. Thanks. It was a joke, Jermaine. Because of that, you should go get some more candy, okay? What I said was, if you were running away from somebody and said thank you, would your mom say, nope, stop and turn around? Yes? We're going to say yes. We don't know. Don't try it, okay? Guys, the Samaritan is this great example of thanksgiving because he realizes I was alone. I was lost. I was separated from all those around me, both those who loved me and those who hated me. And Jesus has set me free, and he cannot help but turn back. There's this wonderful psalm, Psalm 100. Oops, I went too far. There we go. In verse 4, that says that we should enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise, giving thanks to him and praise his name. Because when we are thankful, it automatically directs us towards his courts. When we are thankful, it automatically directs us towards His gates. When we are thankful, it automatically directs us towards Him. Because thanksgiving implies gratitude implies the fact that we are recipients rather than the fact that we've earned it. It's gift. It is, I couldn't earn this forgiveness on my own, but you've given it to me. I couldn't earn this life on my own, but you've given it to me. It is a gift that we freely receive. And when we live out thanksgiving, we're acknowledging that. It's why one of the best things we can do for our faith is to express thanks again and again and again and list them. Now, there are these things called spiritual disciplines. And basically, they're just disciplines that help you to walk in your faith in Jesus. It's just fancy names we give for things. It's kind of like if you have a job or a hobby, there are certain exercises that help you to improve on certain things. So, like most of you know, I'm a runner. But I'm a very, very slow runner. There are some very simple things that I could do that would improve my speed. Yes, sir? No, I'm faster than a walker. Barely. Okay, but I am a slow walker. Excuse me, a slow runner. Ironically enough, I'm a rather fast walker. You would think, guess there are simple things I could do to improve my speed. All right, one of those is lunges. Does anybody know what a lunge is?
Yeah, they make you sore.
Which is why I don't do them. Natalie, it is... And it works out different muscles. Can you tell I don't do these very often? Wow.
You just have to lunge so far because your legs are so.
Do you know how I do you know how I typically fill up your gas tank before you leave and go somewhere? I'm filling up Natalie's today.
Oh, we should have brought the towel.
Wow. There's another thing you can do. You're supposed to do high steps. These are simple things, okay? You raise your knees because it stretches those muscles and it causes you, when you run then, to run in a gait that will make you run faster. They're simple things. But the whole point of them is not that, oh, I want to be the person who does this. I mean, if you see me walking down the road doing this, you're like, what is with Robert? Okay? That's really, don't act like that's normal or anything. I mean, but you would think, this is just really, is he, you know, is he training to be like a German soldier or something? I guess the point is, I want to be a better runner. I should do this. The spiritual disciplines are, I want to be a better follower of Jesus. I want to be more in love with Jesus. These are things that help us to do those. The ones that are always mentioned are prayer and Bible study. Those are excellent. You should be praying and you should read your scripture, okay? 5 minutes. You should do it. But one of the easy ones that's forgotten is counting our blessings. During the day, saying, God, I am thankful for this. And we take some practical things like, oh, when you're thankful for things, it makes you less a grump. But the reality is, I know plenty of nice people who don't do a good job of loving Jesus. Okay? And I know some really grumpy people who do a great job of loving Jesus. The goal here is not for you to be a nicer person. The goal is for us to be more in love with Jesus. So what I want to encourage us to do this week is to specifically count our blessings. Throughout the day, to say, God, you did this, 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 this. You gave me this, 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 this. So that we will realize how dependent we are. And we will realize all the separation that He's chased out of our lives. I think that actually ends up leading to us being a part of Him defeating even more separation, because there is plenty of sin around us, and sin always separates. Now, so before I end, does anybody have anything to add?
Yeah, you said that the leprosy that they're talking about is not the same as ours. It's responding to the threat of getting the type of leprosy that we're talking about, and so they're putting in the colonies, or was it literally just, you have a rash, you can't be part of this
thing? Yeah, think of it like this. We have a more narrow definition of what leprosy is now. They had a broader definition of leprosy. The narrow definition that we have was a part of the broader definition. And there was genuine fear there about the leprosy that we have now.
So what do the people who didn't initially have the narrow leprosy that we know now, wouldn't they have got it by being in contact with those people?
No, leprosy is not contagious like that. We know that now.
Oh.
It's not through touch. So, like, you know, I just touched...
I don't know that now. No,
yeah.
I know.
I'm sorry. I just touched your foot. Actually, we touched shoe to shoe. I don't think you can translate any drug or any infection shoe to shoe. I don't know. It's not contagious like that. They were worried about that, though. And that's genuine worry. But what it led to was you have a rash on your forehead, and it may just be dry, scaly skin. And it never corrects itself because, you know, they didn't have Jurgens back then. And so you're just separated for the rest of your life. There were a lot of people that were separated with things that were just rashes, and that was it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
The modern leprosy, which is devastating, okay? It's also curable now, was a part of the ancient Near Eastern definition, but the ancient Near Eastern definition also just, it involved dry, scaly skin. Yes, ma'am.
I'm wondering why the Jews with leprosy and the Samaritan with leprosy were hanging out together.
Yeah, that's a really great question. I want you to think about now, if you're part of a group and for one reason or another, let's say you do something that's just terrible, or they suspect that you do something that's terrible, and you're kicked out of that group, what would you typically do now? What? Yeah. And if it's bad enough, or what you're suspected of is bad enough, the group you go to is going to be worse. This was a disease that was so separating that even Jews and Samaritans would come together. There's still rivalries that happened in the midst of that. To give you an idea how lonely he was.
So, but I can understand that, but in Leviticus, like, you have the opportunity to, like, you could be healed and then go back to your people.
Yes.
So wouldn't they want to...
These would have been people that... had probably gone through the process, because it was like every 7 days you would be checked again. They would have gone through it for years.
Okay,
again, because like if it's just a little rash that's here for 1 week, no big deal. I don't know why I keep on pointing to my forehead, but if it's a rash like that, no big deal, it disappears. But let's say it's a rash, and it's still just a rash, but it stays for a year. Well, after a year, you're going to be finding another group. Now, you may still be, the rash may disappear. You would go and present yourself. But these are long-term things. This means, basically, this person, the Samaritan and the nine Jews that were in it, they'd probably been separated from the community for at least a year. We don't know how long. And they just reached a point where it's like, we've got to form something. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
Do they speak different languages?
Samaritan. Yes and no. All right, so you know the term anti-Semite? You should have heard a lot of that yesterday, actually, because of the shooting at the synagogue. It usually means anti-Jewish. Semite, though, is all Jews are Semites. Not all Semites are Jews. So everybody in the region of... there we go. So everybody in this region would have been Semitic. Now, out here, not so much. Down there, not so much. Up there, not so much. But all the people right here, so the Philistines that you hear about, they were Semites. So their languages would have been slightly different and yet very, very similar. So most likely, like Samaritan is different than Hebrew, but it's amazingly similar. Aramaic, which is a Semitic language, is different from Hebrew, but it's really, really similar. I don't do Portuguese and Spanish, but I think it would be the type of thing where you can do... My understanding with Portuguese is if you understand a little bit of Spanish, you understand a little bit of Portuguese, but you can really mess everything up also. Does that... Anybody else? All right, then this is what I want to encourage you to do this week. You were created by God to bear His image. And His image, we refer to it as the Trinity, is three in one. He is three so in love that they cannot be separated. One whose love is so great that it must be expressed in three. And Jesus said that we were meant to be brought into that love. And yet, because of our sin, because of our rebellion, there is separation in this world. This week, I would encourage you to make a list of what you're thankful for. Not just things, but the times that Jesus has reconciled, the times that God has reconciled, the events in your life that have been about you being brought back into His grace. And list them off this week and spend time entering His gates and thanking Him. Because the Samaritan was not just healed from his leprosy. When he came back with his thanksgiving, he went from the one who shouted to the Messiah to the one who was with the Messiah. And our thanksgiving directs us to God.
Oh, I have another question.
Go ahead.
Jesus tells all of them, go to the priest, and they don't listen. They don't listen at all.
No, they probably went to the priest.
He comes back. No, but the one guy comes back before he goes to the priest.
Yes.
He's not listening. Isn't there another story where he's talking to the lepers, and they say, and he says, don't tell anybody that it might have been blind people.
It's what's known as the messianic secret. Jesus regularly tells people to give you an idea, Jesus is telling them, you can't actually fully come back into community until you present yourself to the priest.
So he's not saying they didn't disobey. They did disobey him.
Well, the one Samaritan, let's say he temporarily, because he probably still went to the priest and presented himself.
Okay,
because he wouldn't have been brought back into community. But he reaches a point where he's like, I got to go back to Jesus. Okay. And interesting side note, he doesn't say which priest to go to. The Samaritan actually worshipped at a different spot. Okay, the Jews would have worshipped at the temple in Jerusalem, and the Samaritans would have worshipped about right there, slightly different spot. Again, because the religion is very similar, but it's not. If you study the passage of the Samaritan woman at the well, she says, "You people say we worship God in Jerusalem, and our fathers tell us that we worship God in it's Mount Hezekiah, if I remember right." So Jesus doesn't say which priest to go to, because the key here is coming back to Jesus. The Samaritan probably would have, to be brought back into his community, pure practicality, would have had to have gone to the Samaritan priest. All right. Then why don't we end just simply with this? This week, enter his gates with thanksgiving. Would you join me in prayer? Father, help us to recognize how completely dependent upon you we are. And help us to be the people that become so overcome by the fact that we know you have set us free. Free from our sin, free from the things that hurt us, free from the things where we've messed up, that we cannot help but come back to you and bow at your feet. Help us to declare how worthy you are, because we know how worthy you are. And I pray this in your name, Jesus. Amen. Guys, let's sing together.
You guys can stand up if you want to.